In the studio tonight, we have a special guest from the Houston Grand Opera, David Daniels. He also has a brand new CD, and we're going to hear a selection from that. The song and the title of the CD is called A Quiet Thing. And as you could tell, that was A Quiet Thing. That's the title track from the new CD by David Daniels, and he's right here with us. David, welcome to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
What brought you to Houston?
What brought me to Houston was a new production of Julius Caesar by Handel that I'm doing at the Houston Grand Opera.
Okay, is this, how is this a new production? Is it modernized or?
Well, the new production in that it's a new concept, it's a new sets, it's new costumes, it's a new vision by a director, a cast put together for the first time, and to an old piece of music.
Have you done the role before?
Yeah, this is my sixth production of Julius Caesar.
And is this different from the other ones?
You know, yeah, it's I've done many traditional productions of, you know, 18th century dress. This one is updated to sort of a 1920s MGM musical, Busby Berkeley sort of musical, and
Mr. Ziegfeld.
Yeah, it's quite vaudevillian.
Really?
It's really nice. I think we finished two performances so far, and we have four left, and the audiences seem to really enjoy it. So.
Your voice is a countertenor. For those of us who are musically challenged, can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to describe the voice is that I'm a male alto. I sing, although I hate to use the word falsetto, a falsetto voice is sort of the connotation of not being real, of being sort of a false sound. Yeah, false voice, exactly. But that's what it is. And so I think everyone knows the alto section in the church choir, and that's sort of the easiest way to describe it, that I just sing in an alto range.
I read a lot about you. You seem to be in the press all over the country, in New York, Chicago, all the gay press. You're just everywhere.
Just a big...
You're getting lots of press out.
You're getting a lot of press.
Yes. And I've read a number of times about the coming out experience of your voice.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They do speak of it as coming out, and I guess it was to a point. I, throughout my undergraduate degree and my graduate work, as a voice major, I sang as a tenor, but I never felt comfortable singing in that range. And when I was around the house or in the shower or in the car, I always sang in this countertenor voice because it always felt more natural to me. So after years of struggling through school, I finally just sort of hit rock bottom and went to my voice teacher and said, you know, you've heard this other voice. What about it? And actually, I had talked to my shrink about that as well.
Your secret voice.
My secret voice, yeah, I kept from people. And he says, well, bring something in to sing for me next week. And so at that time, you know, people were not going to school as countertenors. Now every time I go somewhere to do a recital at University of Arizona or Madison and University of Wisconsin, there's always at least two or three countertenors in school as students, which was unheard of 12 years ago when I was in school. So I mean, in some ways that was coming out. I finally decided to do the countertenor voice as a full time voice and really went for it. And but it had nothing to do with my coming out sexually.
Both of them are liberating.
Both are liberating. Both sort of let you know what the feeling of the weight of the world off your shoulders really means and feels like. But they were two separate things, happened at different parts of my life.
You were out a number of years before your voice came out.
Yeah, that would be, yeah. who knows what... I mean, everybody has their own definition of what it means for each individual to come out. But for me, it was probably 16 years old, 17 years old when I started I knew that I was a gay man and that I was able to talk to my parents and to friends and brother and sister. And
what have been some of the challenges of being an openly gay artist?
Well, you know, I don't really see it as a challenge. It's been very natural for me. If being yourself and being comfortable with yourself and being honest about who you are is a challenge, then yes, it's been a challenge. But I don't get too much negativity in this business from the public.
Well, also, you're more of a celebrity and... celebrities don't get as much flack.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I'm certainly a celebrity in a small area of the country. I'm a celebrity in the classical world, And being a celebrity in the classical world just certainly isn't equal to being a celebrity in television or in the movies or a sports figure.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people that I feel that we really need to come forward and talk honestly and openly about themselves before anything really we make real strides.
Is there a presumption for the opera going public that countertenors are gay?
Yeah, well, I mean, because you hear a female-sounding voice coming out of a man, sure, there's obviously people think so, and there are many of us who are gay, so, but it's certainly not 100% by any means.
And there's also the added confusion of several centuries of music written for maybe the other sex to sing, and the crossing of gender borders when these different things were sung.
Yeah, I mean, well, you have in this opera, for instance, in Julius Caesar Houston Grand Opera, you have three countertenors, all singing in treble voices, all playing males. You have a mezzo-soprano named Patricia Risley, who is playing a young boy dressed as a man. So there's a lot of gender things going on there.
In many recordings of Julius Caesar, are there women singing your role?
Absolutely.
I found that odd. I went to the Houston Grand Opera website, and they had some clips to hear. And, of course, they didn't have clips of the current production, but of a previous one, I noticed it was a woman singing the Julius Caesar role.
Yeah, well, I mean, the original role of Julius Caesar was written for a castrato, a man who was altered surgically to keep his treble voice at adolescence. And this was a big-time thing back in the 18th century and before, and they were sort of like the Michael Jackson of the century.
Mm-hmm.
And because of their treble voices, nowadays the countertenors are taking those roles. That's why I'm singing it. But mezzo-sopranos also dress as men and sing these roles as well.
With all that sort of gender blurriness, do you think being gay makes it any easier for you to take some of these roles?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with it. The only thing that being openly gay to me personally has to do with is I feel it makes me a fuller artist, a more open artist, someone who is able to communicate and be a little more honest with the audience and with himself, and I think that comes across in my work.
More in tune with yourself.
Absolutely. I think if someone is caught up in themselves, I think that comes across in life, period, but certainly on the stage.
Have you run into much homophobia in the opera world?
Not tons. Ironically, the few homophobic comments and letters and things that I have received have been from members of the gay community itself. And I don't quite understand that. I really don't have any theories on that, but it's the truth. Not an abundance by any means. It's mostly supportive. A middle-aged couple came back after a recital and that I had sung in Berkeley and thanked me very sincerely, you know, for being open and out and proud, and how much that meant to them and to their friends, and hearing things like that really make it all worthwhile. But you know, I'm successful, and I'm in a happy relationship, and things are going well.
Is it 17 years now?
Yeah, 17 years last September.
Tell us about your partner.
His name's John Touchton. He's a Texan.
Oh.
He was born here in Houston. But grew up in San Antonio, and family still lives in College Station in Bryan. He was just here for opening night, so he got to come down for that. He and I live outside of D.C. in Maryland, and he is a music director at a big United Church of Christ up there that in Silver Spring, Maryland, and church is open and affirming to gays and lesbians, bisexuals, and now newly transgender, they just voted on. So
he's in the music business too.
Yeah,
without the travel.
Yeah, he's a pianist. So went to Baylor University.
How would you describe the new CD?
Well, this was an idea. I had done big symphonic discs with arias, and I had done complete operas. And I wanted to do a disc of songs, and I wanted to try to a sort of a different sound. And I thought, what a great instrument to try to match with my voice was the guitar. So I did some research, talked to conductor friends of mine, musician friends of mine in the UK, and they put me in contact with Craig Ogden, who's an Australian guitarist who lives outside of London. And we got together and looked through some music, and the majority of the music on this disc I had heard my father teach. My parents were both voice teachers, so I had heard his students sing these songs, and I knew that these accompaniments would work well on the guitar, and I wanted a very sort of mellow, intimate disc, and I think that we achieved that. It's interesting because I came across the John Kander song from a friend of mine in New York, showed it to me. It was originally written for Liza Minnelli. And so I called Mr. Kander, who I had had the pleasure of meeting after one of my performances, and asked him, I needed to know the sort of the legal ramifications of naming the disc after one of his songs. And he says there was none, and he would be honored. And so I thought, what a perfect title to call something soft and intimate, a quiet thing. So.
It is a perfect title, yeah. And then the song's wonderful. It really sets it off.
Thank you.
How did you pick some of the material? It's a variety. I've tried to describe it to people. Well, there's some sort of cabaret, there's some sort of folk, and then I just got stuck.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty eclectic. There's no question about it. It's it originally started. I wanted an entire American song disc, but my recording label, which is Virgin Classics, is based in Paris, France. And although they were willing to let me record all American songs, they were nervous about the sales of that disc in Europe. So he said, could you maybe put some foreign language songs on the disc to help us over here? And I resisted at first, but then I thought, you know, I'm so fortunate to have a label that's actually doing classical recording still. I better make him happy. So I just went back to some old songs that I had sung as a tenor, and songs that I remember my parents teaching to students, and sort of compiled this list over a few months.
And how many songs were on your original list?
Oh,
100 or?
No. There were probably 10, 15 more that we just sort of whittled down.
Any that you're sorry you whittled out?
Sure, but I mean, that just allows me to do another disc like this.
Are there plans yet, or is it too early?
It's too early for that, but I have some other repertoire I want to record first.
Like, Ain't No Mountain High Enough. I got to hear you do that.
Only in drag, and only for you.
Are there any pop songs that you're itching to do? Just that. For fun?
No, not really.
No?
No.
You're not tempted.
No.
Okay, how many albums have you done? I started counting them on the website.
I think solo albums on Virgin, I have done 6 or 7. I've got about 2 or 3 complete operas out, and I have probably 3 or 4 more solo discs out on different labels. So I'm doing really well. I tell you, it's
when was the first one? How what period of time are we talking about? Like 9, 10 albums in how many years?
Oh, I think I started to record in 97.
Oh wow, that's a lot.
So
that's a lot in a short time.
I've been doing probably averaging about 2 a year.
That's a lot.
Well, it's a lot when you think of that you're away from home 8 months of the year doing opera and concerts, and then you've got to not only learn the repertoire for the discs, but you've got to fit in a recording period in the middle of all your concerts. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy.
So you have to do a couple songs this month and come back and do a couple more.
No, they don't let you do that. No, you do it all.
Oh.
You do it all within a week.
Really?
Yeah. I don't enjoy the recording process.
It was stress?
It's in ridiculous stress, and it's it's just very difficult because you don't have the adrenaline from the audience. So you have to manufacture that.
And there's no feedback of love.
No, there's no feedback of love, exactly. And we all need that.
Is there any dream opera part you would like to do?
I'd like to just continue researching and performing Handel's operas. I mean, there's so many, and they're all fantastic stories and fantastic characters. I would love a new opera written
for you.
That's sort of my fantasy, and a political character or something politically oriented would be really exciting.
Hmm. You have a story in mind?
No, I really don't. Somebody mentioned how interesting doing an opera to Cry to Heaven would be, Anne Rice's book, and I don't know whether she'd be have any interest in writing a libretto or not, but it might could work.
Well, you've already achieved some very meaningful goals, like Carnegie Hall, Metropolitan Opera.
Yeah. Carnegie was in November. That was certainly a highlight of my career so far.
I believe
far.
You were the first countertenor to have a solo recital at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, that's what everyone says. I think that's the truth.
It must be true.
I hope it's true. I don't know. But it was amazing to walk out on that stage. And it seats about 2,800. And I think there must have been 2,500 people there, which was just incredible. I love singing in New York.
Are there any dream venues?
After Carnegie.
After Carnegie Hall, you know, that's the cliche.
Well, after the Wortham Center, there really is.
I see. You're in marketing, too, right?
Exactly. The politically correct thing.
Okay. Are you plagued by any groupies or stage door johnnies, as they say?
No, you know, I don't have any freaks following me around.
It's, no stalkers?
Well, I've got people who travel around the world. I have ladies from Munich who are here for the last two performances, and I have a couple more from Germany who are coming in for the last two performances, but I'm friendly with them, and
that's quite a compliment, people to follow you around the world.
I know, I'm in awe of that sometimes. I can't believe people actually do that.
Maybe they can finance your next recording.
It's pretty amazing. I'm very flattered by that.
Where do you see your career in, say, 10 years?
Well, I just hope... I hope I can continue at the level of singing that I'm doing right now, and just continue to learn new roles and to learn new music, and... I really don't. I'm not one of those people that has a vision of where I want to be in a certain amount of time. I mean, in some ways, I'm doing what I always envisioned that I could sing.
Well, from what I read, you've already created a revolution in opera.
Yeah.
So check.
So those are newspapers who say that. I've never said that.
Okay. So I guess I shouldn't ask you how it feels to be an opera star.
No, I don't really get caught up into all that.
Okay. What do you do for fun?
I'm a sports freak.
Okay.
I'm a nut. I played varsity basketball in high school, and I still play. Pick up games whenever I am in a city that I can find games, and I'm a big baseball fan, a huge Atlanta Braves fan. John, my partner, and I go every summer for a week of games.
Yeah, Brett, he'll go to a live game, but he won't watch it on TV.
No. He loves to go sit in the stadium. And he actually knows the players, and he knows what's going on in the game. But he won't sit in front of the television and watch it. But,
mm-hmm.
I can't have everything.
Well,
you know, it's give and take in a relationship, you know.
Okay. And you almost sang the national anthem at a ballpark?
Yeah, the Atlanta Braves asked me if I wanted to do it, and I just thought, you know...
They're not ready, right?
They're just not ready. 45,000 Atlanta people just not ready for this.
Not ready. What city would be ready?
I don't really know. Maybe New York City. I don't know.
What's the oddest question you've been asked in an interview?
Oh, wow. I don't think I've ever been asked an odd question in an interview. I've been asked...
Other than that one.
I've been asked odd question... at a reception in Florida, in Miami, after a performance, I was asked if I was castrated after the performance.
Not if you were castrated after the performance.
No,
castrated.
Castrated, yeah. After the performance, she asked the question.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Let's clarify that.
Were you castrated after the performance? It was so bad.
It was a bad show.
They castrated you.
You're a tough crowd.
Exactly. Thank you for correcting that. Anyway, so that was probably the strangest question, and she asked it completely, it was serious. I don't know whether she wanted to know whether I was a countertenor, and she just got the words mixed up.
But, mm-hmm. Where can people get your CDs?
Well, they can buy them at any CD store, I would think, Tower or mm-hmm. Amazon.com, certainly, and BarnesandNoble.com. And,
do you have a website?
I have a website, DanielsSings.com. Daniels Sings with two S's in the middle.
Mm-hmm. I tried to find it under DavidDaniels.com, and some jerk took that domain.
They took it. He took it before.
With a boring site.
He's an artist or something.
It's boring.
That's interesting.
Oh, well.
So it is DanielSings.com, so they can see where I'm singing and all that kind of stuff.
We've got a song to go out with. It's from one of your Handel operas, and thank you again, David, for stopping by.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.